Welcome to Political Rewind. Welcome to Political Rewind. We're here at about 3:06 on Friday afternoon. We are live at the State Bar of Georgia, where we have a room full of lawyers, journalists, and I think a few judges I saw in the crowd today to talk about the last 4 days before the Georgia primary. We want to give our thanks to Peter Canfield, who chairs this bar media conference every year and invited us to be here to do the show. And thanks to the State Bar for their help in setting all of this up. So, oh my gosh, panel, do we have a lot to talk about today. We're joined by Todd Rehm of GeorgiaPundit.com. He's a Republican political consultant, but you can also read his blog every day as he reports on national, state, and local politics. My colleague Jim Galloway, the political reporter, writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and he oversees a daily blog, Political Insider, which you can find online. Jackie Gingrich Cushman is here. Jackie is a writer. She's the daughter of Newt Gingrich, so she came up on the Republican side of politics. We're always glad to have Jackie here. Theron Johnson, Democratic political consultant. He ran Barack Obama's reelection campaign in the South in 2008. He brings us news from the Capitol today, so we'll enjoy talking to him about his news. And we also have DeBose Porter. He's the chairman of the State Democratic Party. And, you know, we have so much we can talk about. We've got the last night's food fight, the Republican debate, and I think we're all going to have a lot to say about that and how we think Georgia voters on the Republican side, as they make up their mind headed to the polls on Tuesday, reacted to what they saw. Hillary Clinton is in town this afternoon, the first of a number of candidates who will be here over the weekend. Ted Cruz is headed back here. Marco Rubio has got a number of events here. They're all coming, Jim Galloway.
Yeah. Rubio's making a move here. He'll not only be in Kennesaw on Saturday, but he's added a Monday appearance. We're not quite sure where that is.
It's actually been announced just in the last few minutes that it's at the Intercontinental in Buckhead.
Well, there
Monday.
We go.
Okay, so Jim Galloway, let me ask you a quick question. Cruz is doing an event right at the Liberty Plaza at the state capitol this weekend, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't know about the rest of you. I was surprised that he chose that venue. It seems to me his voters, maybe I should ask Jackie Cushman about that. Do his voters want to come downtown? They strike me as suburban Republicans.
Well, we'll find out this weekend, right?
Hang on. Now, you did have Donald Trump was here on Sunday at the Georgia World Congress Center, and he drew about 8,000 or 9,000. This is I think what we've got here is an attempt by Cruz to draw a really big crowd.
Okay, fair enough.
As well as a lot of his support within the Republican Party is on the South Side, the Fayette County, Coweta area. He's got a lot of strong support out of there.
Yeah, obviously, it's a minor point. But I want to bring in Chairman Porter just briefly. Thank you for coming up here at the last minute. Tell us a little bit. You were with Hillary Clinton at City Hall, where she talked, we're told, to about 500 people today.
It was packed. It was good. And then she went to the state capitol to meet with the Democratic legislators, the caucuses in the House and the Senate. What this shows you is how important Georgia is next Tuesday. And what that translates to is how important Georgia will be in November. We are the prize on Tuesday. And what will happen after South Carolina tomorrow, Hillary Clinton is going to win very big there. On Super Tuesday, she's going to win very big here as well. So shoring that up today as we go into Super Tuesday shows the significance of Georgia and our play in this national election as a battleground state. It shows how far we've come.
All right. Now, I will buy that Georgia is a battleground state when we have a U.S. Senate candidate who is a Democrat. Are we getting close to that?
Well, as you're not talking, yes, we are. And, you know, in the role that I have, it's very interesting. You've got to be respectful. Where I want to go out and shout it out right away, you've got to be respectful of people's business and their personal life. And they've got to manage that in a way that allows them to take care of things to be able to run a race like this.
Well, Mr. Chairman, so this is as good a time as any to tell us who you have in mind to run for that seat.
I think the candidate needs to make that announcement, not me.
Theron Johnson.
Today's all about Tuesday, and it's all about Super Tuesday and launching this presidential race. That's what the big news will be in the next 4 days.
Theron Johnson, the polls all show Clinton just clobbering Bernie Sanders here. I looked at the Real Clear Politics polling averages before coming over here. She's up at 63%. He's down at maybe 20%. Is her appearance here, does it have as much to do with the fact that she's been able to raise a lot of money in Georgia, and this is a way to show the flag and say to the donors, thank you, and I need you to keep working, as much as it is to get the votes that she's already fairly assured of winning?
No, listen, I agree with Chairman Porter. Listen, Georgia is very, very important to Hillary Clinton's success. But I think what you saw in the audience today at City Hall, and she also did an off-the-record stop at the Sweet Auburn Market, was that young people, and particularly women of color, are very excited about Hillary Clinton's campaign. And to me, Bill, that's been the change since New Hampshire. What Hillary Clinton has really been able to do is she's brought an element of humanization to her narrative and her message. And I think that's starting to really resonate with the coalition of voters that we've talked about on the show for a very long time. I mean, it wasn't a shocker that Bernie Sanders was able to win two of the whitest states in the country. And so when you have states like Iowa and New Hampshire who are 90%+ white, of course, a guy who's right next door can do very well. But as the campaign turns south, particularly in South Carolina, and as on Super Tuesday with about four southern states, that's the firewall that we've been talking about.
He took the words out of my mouth. The Clinton campaign, her surrogates and supporters have said for a long time, we have a firewall in the South, because the Democratic Party in the South is predominantly made up of black voters. It does appear, based on the polling, that that's in fact becoming a reality for her.
Well, I think there are two different things. I think, first of all, that is true, obviously. But secondly, I think it comes down to where she's from. I mean, she spent a lot of her time in Arkansas. Her husband was president of, he was governor of that state. She spent a lot of time working on education in that state. So she does have very, very deep roots in the South, and that's going to pay off for her in a very big way against Bernie Sanders. I think the one thing that I think that I heard Theron say that I want to, you know, just pause for a minute and talk about her being more human.
Yeah,
I
this
think,
is radio, so people didn't see the little bemused look on your face when he said that.
And I love the way Theron does it, because he talks about her becoming more, humanizing herself. And, the challenge you have with Hillary Clinton is she's very, very smart. She's very, very tough. She's very, very hardworking. She's just not trustworthy. If you look at the polls from from last summer, they say 57% of Americans don't think she's trustworthy. That's a polling number. The challenge she has is
people have spent a lot of money trying to get that on her. This is the most resilient person I've ever seen.
Well, but you don't doubt. You don't
thrown that again, and she'll be right back up. It's not sticking. Look at.
But wait. You don't deny.
I disagree. It's sticking. Absolutely. These are polling numbers.
Everybody knows, probably the most vetted presidential candidate we've ever had.
Calm down, people. This is not a Republican debate.
That's right. That is exactly how I started to feel. Let me just throw this in, DuBose. You don't deny that the polls do almost overwhelmingly in every one of them show that there's a trust issue here. If you're not able to address that, and Theron, you can weigh in on this too, if you're not able to address that frankly, how does she win the presidency?
A tremendous amount of strategic political money has been spent for that message. So I'm not denying it's not out there. But I think it's something that she has sown with her resilience to be able to come back and fight credibly every time.
It's still an issue.
Well, listen, let's just talk about the elephant in the room, and that is the whole email scandal that the Republicans, I agree with Chairman Porter, has spent millions and millions of dollars of reminding the American people that this happened. I mean, let's not forget what happened. It was very sad. We lost American lives. But I do not think Hillary Clinton would be running for president of the United States of America if she really thought that there was something in those emails that would incriminate her. And so I think that what Chairman Porter is saying is that this is always the Republican line when you start talking about Hillary Clinton. He's right. Listen, she's resilient. She was on fire today in Georgia. And unlike the Republicans, which we saw that show, that circus last night, that she's talking about the economy. She's talking about education. She's talking about making sure that we don't continue to see unarmed black men shot by white police officers in this country. And that's a message that I think that the American people want to talk about.
Jim?
Well, the only thing I would say is that Hillary Clinton has been in the public eye since 1992 or thereabouts, and she's had a lot of rocks thrown at her, and she's thrown a lot of rocks. That builds up some residual feelings about there that you don't have with other candidates who are only maybe 5 or 6 years on the scene.
Yeah, and I think the challenge she has been in the public eye for a very long time, and I think part of the reason that Bernie Sanders resonates so well with the primary voters in many of the states is because he is authentic. And he is real. You can tell he truly believes about people. You can tell that he really wants to help people. Now, we can talk about his policies in a separate statement, and I think they're all crazy, but that's different. I can tell when he stands on stage that he is serious, he is authentic, he is real. When Hillary Clinton stands on stage, she is real, she is serious, she is smart, but you don't feel like she necessarily
Let me add one more thing here, is that, I mean, Hillary Clinton has been through a lot. She's been burned quite a bit. She is. You say she's not trusted, but she isn't trusting. She doesn't trust us media folks very much. And when you distrust people, you can come across as being something that ought to be distrusted.
All right, let me jump back in because let me go to you if I can again, Chairman Porter. So we're going to see Hillary Clinton. We've seen her here today. The polls, if they're proven right, she's going to win by a big, big margin here. She'll win a lot of votes across the South, win a lot of delegates. Is there any path for Bernie Sanders at this point to become the nominee, or is this going to really make it difficult for him to get anywhere?
It will make it difficult for him to get anywhere. You have to love Bernie because he is pure, mm-hmm. but you have Hillary, who has been tested, who has had a long relationship with people here in Georgia, who trust her, who have worked with her. This, as we said, that firewall is very real.
Okay, if that's the case,
and it'll launch again.
All right, if that's the case, and Theron, I'll let you take a shot at this too. If that's the case, is this, except when she needs to come in, and there's nothing wrong with this, to raise money for a general election campaign, Georgia's not going to be in play in a general election, is it? Do you have any reason to believe that Georgia fits into the electoral math of a Democratic general election campaign and a Hillary?
Yeah, listen, I was in Chicago running the South for the president, and I had Virginia, North Carolina, and Florida with my big battleground states. And listen, Georgia can be a battleground state. The problem we have here in Georgia, and no offense to Chairman Porter, but we cannot basically get Democrats in a room to basically coalesce around a strategy to take on a Republican.
Well, you and the chairman are here right now.
One of the things that Jim Galloway has pointed out in his article, and you guys should all Google this article or Bing it because Microsoft is a client of mine, he talks about the declining white voting age population in the state of Georgia. So as we sit here right now, this state is becoming browner and browner and browner. And back to why Hillary is winning. You know, we're on this panel talking like she's behind a delegate count. She's winning right now. And the reason she's winning is because places like Colorado, Nevada, Georgia, and Arizona are the four states that we look at. It's all because of the demographics.
Okay, we all know that Georgia eventually will be in play as a battleground state, as a possible swing state. But we're talking 2016, Jim Galloway.
Well, here's the one thing I would say is I would... 2 weeks ago, I would have said, yeah, you're right. But we've got a Republican Party that's about to make Donald Trump its nominee. And I don't know how many baskets that's going to overturn. I don't know what states that's going to put in play. I don't know whether that does that strengthen the Republican Party up in the Northeast Corridor, or does it make Georgia put more Georgia in play? I don't know.
All right. You've given us an opportunity to turn the corner. Let's talk now about the Republican race for president here. Again, the Real Clear Politics averages of the Georgia polls have been taken put Donald Trump way, way out front, Marco Rubio in second, but Ted Cruz close enough that if he can turn out his army of 7,000 volunteers, whatever he has, he may not beat Donald Trump, but there is a battle for second place. Do you think I'm right about that?
Oh, no, there's a ferocious battle.
Okay, well, I mean, but it's a real battle. It could happen.
It's a battle to see who becomes the alternative to Donald Trump.
All right, so Todd Rehm, last night we all watched the CNN debate, and I think we have to give credit to Wolf Blitzer, who's a veteran journalist. He's smart. He's savvy. And he gets credit for getting as many issues in as he did, but there was no way he could stop. What did you as a Republican feel good about the food fight you saw unfold last night?
I felt about as good watching that as a Republican as I feel watching the Real Housewives of Atlanta as an Atlantan. and it's very much that same dynamic that let's be as outrageous as we can. And Donald Trump has led us to that point in the Republican Party, and the television networks have led us very much to that point in America.
Yeah, Jackie, I think Todd makes a point that we should discuss. This was last night the ultimate kind of Trumpization of the debates. It's Trump who has coarsened the dialogue, who has made the debates into a fight, a dog fight, a food fight, whatever you want to call it. And last night, with Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz realizing they may be on the having their last chance before Super Tuesday, right, to do anything, they adopted his tactics. What does that do to the image of the Republican Party if I'm a Georgia voter thinking about I can take either ballot on Tuesday?
Well, the fascinating thing is if you look at early voting, there are actually more Republicans than Democrats, not right, that have already voted. So you have to wonder, and Trump's in the lead. So just looking at the data, you said that people are now going out to vote in higher numbers. We'll see what actually happens when Super Tuesday comes. I'd first of all say that I've never actually watched The Real Housewives of Atlanta. Just, you know, I've never watched that.
I watch it religiously.
Now I'm going to watch it with you. Yeah. And secondly, I do think it's a real challenge because Trump, you know, not only did he make his living in real estate, but obviously he and reality TV are one. And for us to then turn our political environment into a reality TV show, I think it's really quite sad. But it's where we are. So, you know, you can look at something and say you don't agree with it, but then you can say that's where it is. I do think, and I know he's in a very long shot, I do think John Kasich had a very good debate performance.
That's fascinating. Because last night, a lot of regular Republicans, establishment Republicans, were critical that John Kasich did not take advantage of opportunities to attack Donald Trump when given the way that Rubio and Cruz did. How interesting we've come to that point.
Absolutely. But, you know, I mean, I've known John Kasich a long time. He has the most experience. He actually balanced the federal budget when he was in Washington under my father. He's actually been a governor of a state who's doing very well. He's liked by his state. He's a real person. He really wants the right thing. And he's very down to earth and very matter of fact. And he's not the kind of person with his personality that's going to go after Trump. This is not who he is.
You want to jump in?
Yeah, just especially because we've got a CNN executive in the audience here. At some point, I think you're going to have to, the cable news stations are going to think about how they are playing into the dynamics of the Republican debate. When Kasich was here on Tuesday over at Kennesaw State, I mean, the one thing he said was these, of course, he's been a critic of the debates, but he pointed to the CNN Anderson Cooper town halls that he said were very enlightening. It gave a chance for an actual conversation with a candidate.
All right, Todd, jump in.
You had asked what are the voters at home thinking watching this, and I'll tell you, if their support for Donald Trump is any indicator, they're eating it up with a spoon. And I think that tells us important things and scary things about America today.
Well, it also tells us something about where the Republican Party is heading. I thought, personally, the most poignant moment of the evening last night was the introduction of Barbara and George H.W. Bush, who were in the audience. And I couldn't help, throughout the debate, thinking, Jackie, what is George H.W. Bush thinking as he watches this unfold? What is Johnny Isaacson thinking, a man who is respected widely as a mature leader, whether you like his ideology or not? What are they thinking?
I'm sure they're thinking, wow, it sure has changed a lot. But again, I want to say, I think part of what's happened is our entire culture has changed. And I'll give you an example of why I think Trump is doing so well right now. So I got in my car, and it took me a little over 20 minutes to drive down here. And during that entire 20-minute drive, on Fox, CNN, MSNBC, and Fox Business, they carried Trump and his speech from Texas. I believe he's in Texas the entire time.
Yeah, well,
the entire time.
And that's part of the breaking news today. That speech played out with Chris Christie, the governor of New Jersey, failed presidential candidate, standing at his side and endorsing him. You weren't surprised by that. I was.
Oh, absolutely. Well, first of all, let me back up to my point, which is that the media on many different channels is giving unbelievable airtime to Trump. I think that is in large part why he, one, hasn't spent much money, and two, is where he is, because we are a culture, like it or not, that really, they like to see people on TV. We like celebrities. We like to be entertained. We like to watch things. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying it is. And I think that's part of what's happened.
I must jump in. Listen, the people who are responsible for Donald Trump are the people who are in the Republican Party. They created this guy, and let me tell you why. He is running against the establishment. And let's define the establishment in Washington. This is a group of people who Speaker Boehner could not control, so he quit, right? And now they wanted him, the Republican Party in Washington, to basically stop Obama. That was their number one goal in 2010, right? So when I hear people saying that Marco Rubio, who is yet to win a state, is a viable alternative to a guy, as Jim just pointed out, is on his way in leading the delegate count by like 60 votes, it's just laughable to me. What the American people saw last night is a circus that has been going on for 20 years of just Republicans continuing to talk about issues that doesn't matter, and instead they want to beat up on one another.
All right, we have to take a break, but go ahead, get in a comment.
I do want to say that we have kept a ring for the Democrats in that circus, and and one of the things we're going to have to come to terms with, all of us, is that Donald Trump's appeal is not just within Republicans. Yeah. He is getting support from a substantial number of Democrats.
I have mentioned on this show, the last couple of shows, that it is fascinating to hear Donald Trump starting Jim Galloway to turn toward a general election message. Yes, Planned Parenthood does a lot of really good work. Don't want to fund him on abortion, but he does good work. We're not going to let sick people die in the streets. He's already got his antenna up for the general election battle.
Except when he wants to nationalize the Keystone Pipeline.
Well, that's right. All right. Look, we have got to take a break. So I'm sorry, Theron. We've got to take a break. We didn't get to the question that I'd love to address with you, Todd, or Jackie, about why it isn't surprising that Chris Christie endorsed Trump and what the implications of it are.
That the two bullies and the two biggest blowhards support each other didn't surprise me.
All right, all right. You got it very nicely done, DeBose. You got in the last shot before the break. We are live here at the State Bar of Georgia. It is about 3:28 on Friday afternoon. We're going to start asking people who are here for the Bar Media Conference if they want to ask our panel some questions or make some comments. We'll do that right after our break.
In 1927, the Supreme Court ruled that the Commonwealth of Virginia could sterilize Carrie Buck. Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes notoriously wrote, "Three generations of imbeciles are enough."
He didn't just uphold the Virginia law. He wrote really a clarion call saying, "We need to do a lot more of this. Our nation is at risk. Go to it."
Buck v. Bell and American Eugenics later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 until 7 on GPP.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nigut. We're live at the State Bar of Georgia in downtown Atlanta. Right next, Jim Galloway, to your old offices at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution before you became the Sandy Springs
40 years ago, I was an intern in that building.
Wow.
Next door.
Okay. with me is Todd Rehm of GeorgiaPundit.com, Jim Galloway of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Jackie Gingrich Cushman, a writer and analyst, particularly on the Republican side of things, and Democrat Theron Johnson. And also joining us, because he happened to be here at the Bar Media Conference, the chairman of the Democratic Party of Georgia, DeBose Porter. Let's take a few more minutes on the, come on up. And we do have questions that we'd love to get to from some of the people who are here. There are a lot of attorneys here. They're not getting billable hours out of talking. So they may not come up, but at least we have one right now.
Good afternoon. I'm very interested because I've been following Governor Kasich, even though most of my coworkers think I always vote Democrat, and I've been impressed by him. I'm really curious about how the brokered convention that's starting to be discussed a lot could play out in a way where he or somebody else might surprise many people might end up being.
Yeah, good question. And Jim, we should point out, and then we'll turn to you too, Todd, of course. Kasich doesn't expect to do well here, but he's banking on March 8th in Michigan and then Illinois, Pennsylvania, Ohio. He thinks he's got a path down the road.
As he moves north, yes, and he was down here this week on the bare chance that he might clear the 20% mark and thus pick up a couple of delegates on Tuesday from here, but it's, I will tell you what, the brokered convention formula narrows very, very quickly after the SEC primary here, because if you're not down to one-on-one before you go to the 15th. 15th is where you start having winner-take-all states.
Yeah.
And you can run up some big scores.
Yeah.
Here's John Kasich's weakness if we get into a brokered convention. Brokered conventions and much of personal politics relies on or rewards aggressiveness. And he is probably the least aggressive presidential candidate I've seen ever. He's put out an email today talking about how Rubio has these bad poll numbers and Kasich's are better. And then he said, "Oh, but to be fair to Marco, all these polls were done before he did such a great job at the debate." And so he is so set on being moderate, both in terms of style and in terms of politics, that I don't think a brokered convention works in his favor.
His shtick is the huggable governor.
Yeah.
I'm not sure he's quite huggable. He's close. But I think the challenge is he'd be a great president, but he's not a great presidential candidate. And people that are behind this time in the Republican nomination, they like to talk about a brokered convention because what are they going to talk about, how they haven't won a state yet? So they're talking about a brokered convention because that's the only path that they have. The chances of that actually happening are probably pretty small, especially if you have a Super Tuesday, which are proportionally allocated. If Trump walks with a lot of that and then you go into the next phase, the chances of it going to brokered conventions are probably pretty small.
You want to jump in?
No, I was just going to say, I think from a Democratic point of view, I think Governor Kasich will give us some problems. But I personally think that he's running for vice president right now. And I think that, to Todd's point, he's kind of low energy like Jeb Bush was. And at a time when you have this angry Republican electorate, I just think that he's not going to really be able to catch fire enough to be the nominee.
Todd, let's talk just a little bit about Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz. Cruz has a path on next Tuesday, on March 1st, to move forward if he wins Texas, right? I mean, that's certainly the big state for him, right?
And that's almost a do-or-die state for
right,
him
right,
carrying.
Right. And so do you agree with that, Jackie?
Well, I think there are two things. I think, first of all, if you're running for president, it's really hard if you lose your home state because you lost your home state. I think, secondarily, you have to win the state, but if you just win that state, that doesn't help you that much, especially because there are 155 delegates in Texas, but they're going to be proportionally allocated, so you don't get all of those delegates. So I think, it's kind of a no-win situation. If you win, then you didn't lose, but if you win, you still don't get all the delegates, so I think it's still a challenge for him.
Go ahead, DeBose.
Well, whether there's a brokered convention or not on the Republican side, Democrats are going to go to Philadelphia, our convention, unified.
Okay, but
you're not going to have that, whether it's a broker convention or not, Republican.
All right, so let me reframe this, though, the Cruz-Rubio fight in terms of Georgia voters, Todd. The Georgia Republicans do have a chance to give either Marco Rubio or Ted Cruz a boost, even if it's second place. What are you seeing out there in terms of, suddenly Rubio's got some endorsements from elected leaders, Jan Jones, Speaker Pro Tem, downtown endorsed him the other day. Some others have hopped on that train as well. What do you see developing as you talk to your friends out there across the state?
The number one dynamic that I'm hearing is Trump anxiety, and that overwhelms everything else. There's a lot of discussion of first choices and second choices and who's best positioned, if they start to crater on Super Tuesday. But what I've seen consistently is that the Cruz campaign has really staked a claim to Georgia in terms of the amount of time the candidate has spent here. He's been here at least twice as often as anyone else has during this presidential campaign. And they have put a lot into what is as good a ground game for a presidential election as I've ever seen any candidate in Georgia have. But the proof is always going to be in the pudding, and the fact that this looked a lot different 6 months ago when you didn't know that Donald Trump had the staying power he does.
Yeah, I think that's a great
point.
Yeah,
exactly. And I agree. I mean, Ted Cruz, I think, has the best organization. What I would suggest on Tuesday, if you all want to watch something, is watch where he places, because if where Ted Cruz places could have a great deal to do with how the religious liberty debate in the state capitol goes. If you take the Cruz organization and the religious liberty backers, and they almost overlap to a person. It'll be a good measure of strength.
So you're saying if Cruz finishes third, it may be a signal to the legislators who are undecided about where they stand on religious liberty that their constituents may be a little less...
It may make them a little bit more comfortable.
Theron Johnson, do you see... You know, Cruz has this army here. He thought he had the evangelical vote. South Carolina proved that wasn't the case, because South Carolina proved to us that evangelicals are much more diverse. They're not, a monolithic army behind one candidate.
Sometimes they're not even theological.
All right. So... you as a Democrat, Marco Rubio is a very attractive guy, young, somewhat charismatic when he decides to be spontaneous. He can be funny. Last night, even as he was yelling, he was kind of funny. Is he a potential big threat to Hillary Clinton in a general election?
Well, again, I think when I look at Marco Rubio's campaign, I just want him to win a state first before... We sit up here. Trump has got an enormous, and I'm trying to do my best at Trump impressionation, enormous lead in the Republican field.
It's a good thing you're a lawyer, because that wasn't great.
But more importantly, let me tell you why Rubio is important. Because Florida is going to matter in this election. And everyone up on this panel knows this. It's two states that matter most in presidential politics, Ohio and Florida. Barack Obama, because I was there, we won that state by 44,000 votes, right? And so you got to be really careful with Rubio, because he's got to be either on the ticket or somewhat involved, because Republicans, if they're smart, they will not do what Mitt Romney did in 2012, and that is just run a bunch of TV ads and not really have a ground game there, specifically a ground game that targets young Cubans and Puerto Rican voters along the I-4 corridor. And so you got to make sure that Rubio does it. But back to Georgia, I just think that the Trump momentum is just going to be too strong. Every poll that you look at, he is leading here, and people in Georgia are some of these people who are very angry. Now, Ted Cruz, on the other hand, I agree with Todd, has a very, very good ground game here. I mean, he's been organizing here for a long time. And when I talked to Secretary Kemp yesterday, and to Jackie's point, when you have more Republicans who, by the way, they always try to tear up early voting because they say it's illegal and it basically voter fraud. But you have more Republicans now who have voted early than Democrats. And so to me, if you are a Trump supporter, there's nothing that Rubio or Cruz can tell you that will not make you go out and vote for this man.
No, I agree. I mean, Trump clearly has the lead in Georgia. I think if you think about why Trump is so successful, first of all, he's an outsider. I mean, obviously. I mean, he's not been part of the political process. He talks about being a businessman. He's obviously a reality TV star. And for those people that are very disenfranchised and are upset with the current government, they're looking for someone who's an outsider. The second thing he has, and, you know, Cruz is trying to run as an outsider, and it's very hard to run as an outsider when you're actually a United States senator. It's really, really quite challenging. And Carson is an outsider, but Carson, who is obviously very smart and very compassionate, I would love to have him as my doctor with his bedside manner. He's just not very charismatic, and you don't have that kind of passion behind him. The second thing that Trump has is he is very sure of Trump. Right? And that's the one thing you know, is he's going to win. He's going to win all the time. And I think in an environment where people are very nervous and very unsettled, that appeals to them. And back to your point earlier about it's not just in the Republican side, there's an interesting article a while ago in Politico talks about who does Trump appeal to, and it's those people that believe in that like the authoritarianism kind of model. And not only is it Republicans, but 39% of independents and 17% of Democrats have that same type of mindset. And so when you look at who he appeals to, it's not just about the policies and where he stands from. It also is because he's an outsider and because he has that strong get things done, will actually be successful.
All right, who wants to jump in
and
here?
Well, I would agree. I would say that yes, that sense of surety is very important, and that's what makes this Chris Christie move so very interesting.
But the reason why Donald Trump is not going to get Democratic voters and independent voters, because this guy is talking about building a wall. He basically disrespects women. And he also basically wants to go out and pick fights with the Middle East. And so, to me, that's not a message that's going to resonate with Democrats.
Jim?
Well, no, but what I would say on just back to Rubio here, this is what makes Chris Christie so darn dangerous to him, because Rubio thought last week that he had escaped his reputation as a callow youth. And Chris Christie has just it's like Rubio's got to think that he's in a horror movie.
All right,
he killed the monster, and it keeps coming back.
All right, we got to take a break in a minute. But first of all, Todd Ream, when I heard Jackie describe Donald Trump compared to the politicians in the field, I suddenly thought Jack Kingston against David Perdue. The seasoned veteran member of Congress against the outsider businessman who says he wants to shake things up. Is that a fair comparison?
I think that Perdue was the first to identify that outsider current in the electorate. I do want to mention that Jackie's father, when I was speaking to him in January, he counted Cruz as a member of the Senate as being one of the outsider candidates, and Trump kind of keeps saying stuff that plays into that.
Trump constantly says he's the outsider. Nobody in the Senate's endorsed him. He's nasty. Nobody likes him.
Yeah, this has happened I mean, my dad ran as an outsider in the 70s because he was a college professor. So, I mean, this always happens in waves. And I think, you know, for my father, Cruz probably is an outsider. But if you look at the general population and you talk about being an outsider but United States citizen, senator, it doesn't really fit in your head.
All right, let me move on because we're going to take a break in a second. I do want to update you if you haven't seen the news about Marco Rubio on the trail today. He really thinks he had a big night last night. He may have good reason to think that. He's very energized. Here's a report from the campaign trail from Politico. Marco Rubio relentlessly mocked Donald Trump, escalating the attacks, this is this morning, that he unleashed during the debate, even suggesting the Republican frontrunner may have wet his pants on stage. This thing, Jim Galloway,
is getting
nastier and nastier. All right.
Good.
Look, we have to take a break. There's some really important news that has developed today, breaking news down at the state capitol. It includes the fact that the MARTA bill, which many of us thought maybe transit was on the way to getting somewhere, was killed today. And we're going to talk to Theron Johnson about what I think is a somewhat surprising development, that it looks casino bill came out of committee yesterday, and it looks like there might be a floor. It might be on the floor on Monday, crossover day. You're listening to Political Rewind at about 3:44. We'll be right back.
Happy Friday. You're listening to Political Rewind on Georgia Public Broadcasting, an 18-station radio network. I'm Ellen Reinhart. GPB Atlanta is licensed to Georgia State University with 8 colleges and schools, including the Andrew Young School of Policy Studies.
Super Tuesday is big.
A huge portion of delegates is up for grabs.
13 states will decide.
Plus American Samoa and Americans abroad.
So, can Donald Trump be stopped?
Will Hillary Clinton hold on to her lead?
I'm Ari Shapiro.
And I'm Rachel Martin. Join us Tuesday for results and analysis on the big night.
It's live elections coverage from NPR News.
Georgia's part of Super Tuesday? Find out the results. Listen live at gpb.org from 8 to 11 Tuesday night.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. We're here live at the State Bar of Georgia on this Friday before the primary election next Tuesday. Just a quick couple of program notes. Political Rewind is going to be on the air 3 times next week because it's such a big week in Georgia politics. We're going to be doing a live election special on Tuesday at 2 o'clock as you all out there go out and vote. We're going to be talking to voters from around the state about why they made the decisions they did. We're going to have Brian Kemp come on and update us on how turnout is going and where he's seeing problems, if any. We're going to have reports and insiders from around the state who'll be part of it. And so I hope you'll tune in for our election special on Tuesday. And I'll be working for NPR over the weekend and Monday, reporting for them, for the network, about what's happening here in the South as the primary unfolds, the big SEC primary unfolds. Jim, you and I, and the panel for that matter, have said for weeks and weeks, we thought there was real movement towards a MARTA transit bill, a bill that would devote a portion of the penny that the legislature already approved last year for the transportation initiative they passed toward expanding MARTA, giving voters the chance to decide if they wanted a portion of that penny to go to expanding MARTA all the way up to Windward Parkway and out east on Long I-20. What happened?
Right. You had a Republican senator, Brandon Beach of Alpharetta, toss in SB 313, which would have done that. You had people like Rusty Paul, mayor of Sandy Springs, saying good things about transit. Jerry Wood, mayor of Roswell, saying the same. It sounded magical. But today, SB 313 didn't make it onto the wasn't passed out by the Senate Rules Committee. It won't be on the calendar for crossover day. There's no vote, and that means it's dead.
Have you? We've just learned this really a couple hours before going on the air. And have you had a chance to make any calls to find out who killed this thing?
Well, I would. The death would have occurred in the Senate Republican Caucus.
Right.
And it would have been probably. I'm assuming you had. Beach was the only senator with North Fulton ties who was in favor of this. You had John Albers, Fran Miller, a bunch of others saying no.
Todd, we had Jan Jones on Lawmakers the other night, and Speaker Pro Tem, I asked her, could you support this thing if it passes on the Senate floor and comes over to you? She was very circumspect, but she suggested she didn't think she knew enough about the language that would go into, excuse me, the resolution that voters would get a chance to vote on. She said, will they be clear on how many years this tax will be collected? Is this the sort of thing you think might have killed it?
No, I think it was suburban opposition, and I think it was the fact that Absolutely. A majority of the Republican caucus could not do this. There were at least 29 votes against it this morning, and on day 29, day 30, they're not going to bring something to the floor that doesn't have a chance of passing, or at least a substantial chance.
What does this say about our appetite for transit?
Republicans still treat public transportation in a way they think of public assistance, and it's wrong and it's backward, and Georgia will never be the state it should be until we do pass a massive transparent bill like the progressive states in the country.
Theron, you're nodding.
This is a sad day in Georgia. I mean, every time a person in the audience or listening to this show, you're stuck in traffic, which a lot of these folks who live in northern parts of the county, whether it's DeKalb, Fulton, or Gwinnett, you need to be outraged at what happened today with the Republicans basically killing this bill. The whole opposition against transit in this region is so incredibly, like it's just so insane to me, because we want to be a region that create jobs. And if you look at the last 25,000 jobs that have been created in this region, they are all either near or at a MARTA stop. So the point is that who is against basically having a transit system in place that goes enough north to the point where they can reduce their amount of time to basically get from work? But let's just call it what it is, Bill. This is basically about race. If you look at the inception of MARTA, when MARTA was created, there was a large constituency of white voters, particularly in Cobb and Gwinnett, who opposed MARTA because they did not want black people coming to their region.
All right, let him finish his thought, and then I'll get to you.
So until we're able to have that conversation and deal with the origin of this problem, we're going to continue to have bills like this be destroyed like it was today.
Todd?
I would say this was not at all about race. It was about dollars and cents.
Well,
And it was the most important fact that was left out of a lot of the early polls showing support for this is that none of this great transit comes online until 2030 and beyond. And so the idea that this is going to have a positive impact on traffic anytime in the near future is just pure fantasy.
No, it's about priorities. Years ago, well, when Barack Obama was first elected and the economy was going off the cliff, we had the opportunity in Georgia to get substantial money for mass transit here for a very small investment on our part, and we said no. Georgia's economy has not recovered like many places in the rest of the country because we continue to say no to things that would help us grow right here in the state.
Jim, I want to let you get a word in, and then I want to ask you a question about all this.
Okay, well, first I would say this is the first shoe to drop here, okay? You've had a veto by the road and bridge enthusiasts over rail. They are going to go after that penny sales tax and try to fill it with nothing but roads and bridges. We've seen polling. We've seen the shift in polling. Now you're going to have transit people decide whether they can veto that approach. And if that happens, then I think the real bargaining begins.
So you think, excuse me, to some extent they're adopting a bargaining position? Or it's going to lead to a bargaining position?
I think it's going to lead. This conversation isn't going to stop. It's going to lead to something else.
Right. So this conversation, just the few minutes we've had up here, where different perspectives and talking about a very long-term view in 2030, shows you why the bill actually got killed. It's because it's a very complex policy, and it's an election year. And this is what happens on both sides. This is what happens when things get very, very tough, is that if they're not sure if it's going to be able to sell through. I mentioned earlier, I think, Jim, you may have mentioned that, if it doesn't look like it's going to go through pretty easily, they say, let's wait and see, because really hard, complex things, as you all know, in political years often get moved to the next year.
So here's what I find. Help me understand this before we move on. This is not a tax increase. This is taking a portion of the penny that the legislature already this past session approved.
Yes, but voters have not approved it.
But that's a good point, Bill, because this whole thing that Todd is saying about when it would go into effect. Listen, people are tired of being in traffic today. You know, people want a transit system that they can use and go more places.
But
the point that you made is this. It actually did not raise the cap, nor did it raise the tax. Right. And listen, Republicans voted for this last year.
All right, let me get somebody who wants to weigh in. Terry McRae.
Hey, thank you. As somebody who lives out, I've lived in other major cities like Washington, D.C. and New York City. Metro, the MARTA system is a failed system. Mm-hmm. And until we fix MARTA, it doesn't really matter how much money we put into it. How do we address MARTA itself not being a good system? And then also with the road systems, when we designed Atlanta, bring in two interstates into the middle, 75 and 85 and 20, we have to come up with other issues and look at other places in the country where this works. Like Houston, Texas, they start putting extra rings around the system. Georgia needs to start coming outside of itself and find other solutions to help, else our economy will never grow because nobody wants to come here to work.
So, Todd Rehm, there is partisanship involved, but the sponsor of this bill is a Republican from Alpharetta. I mean, a community, an upscale community, that where you'd think they wouldn't want transit at all.
It's not whether he's a Republican or not. It's the fact that all of the other Republicans surrounding the area oppose it.
Well, my point. Okay.
And I want to go back and discuss Mr. McRae's question. Atlanta is not Chicago. It's not New York. We don't have a single downtown. We've got about seven or eight of them. And so the models that work for mass transit in other cities where everybody goes one place in the morning and spreads out back to the suburbs in the evening, that just doesn't work here. We've talked about an outer ring in the late 1990s, and that got pretty well shut down by the folks who lived around there. And I don't know the solution.
All right. We got time for just really one or two other issues. Theron Johnson, another thing that I think surprised many of us who watch the Capitol is casino bill came out of committee yesterday. It was approved in committee. It has an opportunity to go to the floor on Monday now, crossover day, the last day that any bill can, as you all know, start in one house and still, if it's passed out, still get considered by the other. That's obviously good news to people who are working on casinos. How did this happen? Give us the inside information.
I can't take all the credit. I am one of a few lobbyists who represent MGM, and there's a host of casinos here, so I won't be fully disclosed. It was a team effort. But listen, the people, and AJC has reported this, 62%, 84% of the people say that they are okay with casino gambling in Georgia if it's somehow going to generate revenue for the Hope Scholarship in pre-K. And so I think what you saw, and a lot of people, you know, said this was done, is once the legislators heard from their constituents and knew that this was nothing but a bill that would allow you, the voters, to vote on it in a constitutional amendment or whether you would like for this bill to pass, I think they voted out of the committee. It was unanimous support. And what happened today is that it made it out of Rules Committee, and it made it on the floor. And I'm here now, so I'm not sure what's going on back at the Capitol. But we feel very comfortable that it will get an up or down vote in the House on Monday.
So, Jim Galloway, this bill coming to the floor where everybody can either be well, you tell me. This is a very, very vulnerable position to put an awful lot of legislators in on Monday.
In an election year. I will, you know, with all due respect to Theron, I will believe that it will reach a floor vote when it reaches a floor vote and the bell
So dims. Are you suggesting – now, wait. Let me make sure, Theron, because we haven't been down there today. The Rules Committee – has or has not put this on the calendar at this point?
It was on the calendar for today, but right. I don't think it was voted on. But another thing I must say is this. I must compliment the Republican because I want to be fair. I think that Matt Ramsey led this effort. He was the co-chair of the study committee who really took a long look at this. But I also must compliment the Democrats. They have locked down on this and said that basically there's got to be a needs-based language in this bill in order for us being the lobbyists to push this bill forward. And so we're having a conversation, which is very rare at the Capitol these days, on both sides of the aisle.
And let's get the name of the bill right. It's not a casino bill.
It's the Hope Preservation Act.
Real quick, DuBose, you got about 20 seconds to respond to this. Do you think you want to be a legislator, they're all up for re-election, who has to go back to his constituents and say, yeah, I voted for you to have the chance to gamble in Georgia, or no, I voted against it. I mean, this is a tricky proposition for a lot of these guys because they don't all know where their constituents stand on this.
Well, it is. That's going to be a tough issue. I'm kind of with Jim on this. Let's see what happens next week. But I am proud of Stacey Abrams and Calvin and all saying that the only way this can pass is if it's a needs-based Hope.
All
because
right.
The Republicans have gutted Hope. They did with Sonny Perdue, and the deal has done the same thing. And until you have a needs-based program, you're not going to get the support.
Jim, you got 20 seconds to say the last word.
The most important date right now facing the legislature is March 11th. That's when qualifying ends, and lawmakers will know whether they have a primary
there
opponent.
You go. All right, we are completely out of time for Political Rewind today. Theron Johnson, Jackie Cushman, Jim Galloway, Todd Ream, and Chairman DuBose Porter, we had a great deal of fun, a lot of fun with all of you today. We'll be back for our special edition of Political Rewind on Tuesday. Thanks to producer Jenny Amon. Thanks to our booking producer, Daryl Welch. Thank you, Georgia Barr. We appreciate your having us here. See you next Tuesday.